Yo, for those of us who prefer fresh, world-class coffee to start our mornings rather than a glass full of raw eggs, there's Sparkplug Coffee! Most coffee you get at the grocery store or at your local cafe was roasted months before it got to you. Sparkplug Coffee roasts your beans when you order them, then delivers right to your door anywhere in Canada within days. Sparkplug has a variety of roasts and grinds to suit any taste, so next time you need that extra boost to get you to the top of the stairs of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, choose Sparkplug! Get yourself started at sparkplugcoffee.com.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Yo, audience. Thanks for downloading the Top 100 Project, where we do things like talk about the American Film Institute's 1998 and 2007 lists of the bestest American movies, you know? If you ain't never heard about my victorious defeat in this here movie, don't listen no more. I'm Rocky Ellis with my shy, sweater-wearing wife, Bev.
That's me.
Yo, Bev, that's enough of the Rocky voice. Let's get out of that.
Thank God.
I'm sure I'll throw a few more Rockyisms here as we go. Okay, well, we've established what the movie is. So the coming attraction is trivia for this week's film. What is the only other AFI movie that won the editing Oscar, made the Top 100 Thrills list, and was in the sports category of the Top 100 Genres?
Okay, the big hint that you gave me here is that it won the editing Oscar, which is a weird distinction. And there's one sports movie that also happens to be an iconic film for editing, and that's Raging Bull. And I know that Thelma Schoonmaker won the Oscar for that.
That was correct, Raging Bull.
Nice.
It also shares producers, a studio, and of course subject matter with Rocky.
That was on the thrills list, Raging Bull?
Yeah.
It's not a very thrilling movie. I would never describe it as such.
They have a few movies on there that are debatable. We've talked many times about the lack of horror on this list, the main AFI list. There aren't that many horror films on the Thrills list, which is where a lot of them belong. Then they found room for things like Raging Bull and Rocky. And of course, Rocky is more a matter of getting you up out of your seat.
Passion, definitely uplifting, but not thrilling.
Heart-pounding is actually what I think they called that show, too. Most heart-pounding movies. So
that's...
We're going to talk about that plenty when we get to Raging Bull, which is not that many weeks away. This film, the 95th edition of the Top 100 Project, Rocky, was 78th on AFI's 1998 Top 100 between American Graffiti and The Deer Hunter, then punched all the way up, all the way to 57th in 2007 between Jaws and The Gold Rush. United Artists premiered Rocky on November 21st, 1976. Then they released the boxing flick on December 3rd. Rocky only cost $1 million, but grossed over $220 million. And the series as a whole made plenty of money. But first things first, this film, Bev will describe it for you now, although you probably know Rocky. Here she goes.
Sly Stallone is journeyman Philadelphia boxer Rocky Balboa, who gets an unexpected shot at the heavyweight champion Apollo Creed, played by Carl Weathers. Crusty old veteran manager Mickey, played by Burgess Meredith, trains the underdog for the big fight. Meanwhile, Rocky romances Talia Shire's Adrian, the pathologically shy sister of his alcoholic friend Polly, played by Burt Young.
Or in a nutshell, pugilist professes preference for pet shop worker proceeding public pummeling. Okay, I'm going to give you a lot of numbers here before we get into the body of this, so get comfortable. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 92% of them like the movie. It's pretty strong. 49 fresh, 4 rotten, but 68% of audiences. Giant split. Titanic has a very similar split, also on the Best Picture Oscar, and a bit of a controversial choice in its own right, as this one was. I mentioned those sequels, and we'll stay with the Rotten Tomatoes theme here. They literally went down in most cases as we go along. So Rocky 2, the first one is for critics, second for audiences, 72% and 81%, so still pretty good. Rocky 3, 61%, 74%. Going down, but not terrible. Rocky 4, 43% of the critics, 80% of audiences. And that is the flag-waving Drago one.
I think a lot of people like that movie, ironically, because
so
bad, right?
I've often said it's a great movie and a terrible movie all at once. When I used to do the top 10 list and really cared about that so much, it was on my best of and worst of in 1985. All right, Rocky V, here's where we get bad. 26% of critics liked it, only 32% of audiences. But they bounce back with Rocky Balboa, 76% of both critics and audiences. So a huge spike there for him in his nostalgia movie, which basically was this movie all over again.
People liked Rocky VI better than they like Rocky I.
No.
You said it was 68%
audiences. Oh, the audiences. Yes, you're right. That's right. Yeah. The audiences actually like 2, 3, 4, and 6 Rocky Balboa more than they do the first one. You're right. Although they never come close to the 92% of critics in that scale.
That's the expectation effect right there.
And as we keep talking about this long series, and there's going to be another one, a spinoff. It'll be about Apollo Creed's son that Rocky's going to manage. Son or grandson. But anyway, it'll be called Creed. So in effect, there will be a 7th movie. But as Leonard Maltin once said, I think it was about Rocky IV, enough already. Okay, a few more numbers and I'll let Bev give her opinion on this film. These are even stronger. Box Office Mojo, adjusted for inflation list. We haven't really had that so much the last little while, despite the quality of the films, except for Jaws and Cuckoo's Nest. But 74th on that list. Whoa, that's pretty high. And it's only $1 million behind Rocky Horror Picture Show.
No way.
You know, a curious little thing that is. And Rocky III is 141st on Box Office Mojo's adjusted for inflation list. Only Five was an actual failure because even Rocky Balboa a few years ago wasn't a big hit. Neither was Rambo that he did a couple years later, but they did pretty solidly. And the last number I'll give is this movie was number one in 1976. That's no surprise. It was far and away number one, in fact. Okay, what'd you think?
I came around to it. It's a popcorn film. I wasn't feeling it for the first act, but once Rocky got the fight and the girl, then the momentum really picks up. I found myself really invested in it. Hard done by guy or team or whatever getting in their shot. It really is not my favorite flavor of Hollywood formula. But as those go, I can really see the appeal of Rocky, and I appreciate the touches that make it stand out from all the other American Cinderella stories.
And that had been done before this movie, of course. But
Is
the one. This is the touchstone that people will point to when that kind of story is done.
Yeah, and they didn't reinvent the wheel by any means. And we'll probably talk about what gave this film a unique appeal above all the other blueprints and copies came before and after it.
Maybe because Stallone was adapting it from reality. His own life mirrors this as an actor.
There's a striking authenticity to it.
He was doing the job of being an actor, and Rocky's doing the job of being a boxer. They're not making much money. Stallone was practically starving, as is Rocky in the early part of this film. And it took this big break to have written this screenplay that no one wanted to cast him in. No studio said, you can play the main character. James Caan's name that got bandied about the most, I believe.
I would love to have seen that.
And I once read somewhere that Stallone said he'd rather be in the dirt with the worms in his backyard than have James Caan play the role. I don't know if that's anything personal against him. I don't think it is. It's just that if I'm ever going to make it in this business, I got to play this character. And that's why they got such a tiny budget to make it. Most of it on location. As we know, you make a movie on location, it's a lot harder when you got to go out there with all your equipment. As limited as they may have been with equipment, as few people they probably had for the crew, and they didn't have a very big cast. Roger Ebert, the guy we've talked about so often on this podcast, the great critic that he was, he points out the movie's very empty.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really ever see anybody in Rocky's neighborhood except for him and Mickey when he comes to his place, when he's running. One of the things that works so well in that very first of the... Every movie did it, actually, a training montage.
Even Rocky has a montage.
Thank you, Team America. But in the second movie, when he's running, he's joined by kids. I like that sequence, too. You know what I'm talking about, of course, when he runs up the steps. In the second movie, and here's a bunch of spoilers. I think we said this already. I'll spoil all the other movies. She's never going to see them anyway.
I'm never going to see them.
And I did show you part of both 2 and 4. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But these random kids join him on his race up the steps in the second movie. And that's fun. He's become a name. He's got another shot at Apollo Creed. He shouldn't have it, but okay. And 3, in the big dan dan da da dan da da dan da 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 scene, it's him and Apollo that he actually beats him in a foot race, which of course is irrational. In 4, it's not even this music, it's a different song, which I like, but it's cheesy and it's Hearts on Fire. He runs up a mountain and has that famous Family Guy mock this moment.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Drago! Top of the mountain. In 5, he doesn't really have a training montage, actually, because he doesn't really ever fight except for a street fight. And Rocky Balboa, which I just watched this afternoon. We talked about the scores the critics and the audiences gave it. I'm with them. In fact, I'd go higher than 76%. It's very nostalgic. It's very sweet. And it proves that Stallone can act.
Mm.
As these movies went on, no, he doesn't do anything. It's funny how he's a dumbass in the first movie and in the second. He's illiterate in the second movie, in fact. They make that very clear. In the third movie and the fourth movie, he's a corporate guy. His hair's all coiffed. He's a businessman. As Rocky goes, he's kind of brilliant. It doesn't make much sense. But then he gets his brains beat out by Drago and he becomes this kind of dumbass again.
Yeah, in the initial response with the critics had, a lot of people called him the next Brando, probably because there were so many similarities on the waterfront, and
right.
He so convincingly portrays that everyman, that real likability and authenticity. Obviously, a lot of them were proven wrong. It's funny, if you read critics talk about it in the 70s, they heap all this praise onto him and this performance, but then those same critics writing about it years later are like, okay, maybe we were wrong about calling him the next Brando, but you still have to respect this performance. Even if the role was just written perfectly for him and it was the perfect acting vehicle for him, his performance in this movie is great. Is he a great actor? Hell no, but he is great in this movie.
In the right role, he can be excellent. And as far as the life imitating art thing goes, so in this movie, he's a nobody who gets his one shot, the actor and the character, kind of the same thing. The second movie, it's all about how he had that great shot, but now things are not going so well for him anymore. He's well known, but now what does he do at this point? Because between the first Rocky and the second Rocky, he made other movies, and they weren't very successful. The third one is, how does he handle fame and not get soft? And of course, by that point, he'd done Rambo as well. Yeah. And now he's more firmly entrenched in the zeitgeist. Well, he and Reagan ended the Cold War with Rocky IV. And if I could change, and yous could change, everybody could change.
You show me that scene, it was so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's so over the top silly. For them. And yet, the best scene in the whole series is in the sequel. I don't think the best scene is in this first movie. And it's mirrored in this first movie, though, where Mickey goes up to Rocky's apartment when he finds out that Rocky's getting this shot. And we all love Mickey. Ah, Rock, knock you tomorrow! Such a cliche kind of performance that's been done 100 times before this one and 1,000 times since this one. And yet, the character of Mickey is pretty opportunistic. He does want to help him, I believe that. But where were you when I needed you 10 years ago? That may be his best moment in the whole film. It's Rocky when Mickey leaves and he's yelling at him. And he keeps on screaming, I'm going to get that! I'm going to get that! You want to see me get my brains beat in? And then that nice little moment of reconciliation, which we don't even witness. It's a long shot. That's really well done. My favorite scene is in Rocky 2. The parallel of that is when Rocky goes to Mickey's apartment. He's been retired. Apollo beat him so bad, even though, and here's a big spoiler, Rocky doesn't win this fight, even though he lasts the 15 rounds, which is the only thing he wanted to do in the first place. Rocky has got nothing. He's got no money. He's got no job. We know he can't read. He can't even read cue cards for commercials. What else is this guy going to do? He's been a fighter his whole life. He's got no other skills. He wants to do that. Well, anyone who's seen Rocky 2, I don't need to explain the scene too thoroughly. And I show it to you. Mm-hmm. I think you agree it was a pretty great moment. That's what happens in sports. It isn't the throw the touchdown or you make that three-pointer. The buzzer goes off. You win the championship, Super Bowl, whatever it is. Your career is over in the great way. No, most athletes, when they lose their career, even really good athletes, have it end in a doctor's office or in somebody's hallway that says, yeah, your career's over, kid.
Okay, but he ended his career. His last fight is that fight against Apollo Creed, which is no question the high point of his career. Mm-hmm. By leaps and bounds. And if that was his last fight, then he really did end on top. But then the statement that they're making is that those athletes that do finish on top probably still miss working, probably still miss playing.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Fighting. He can't give it up. Yes, he had that last great moment. His last great public moment would have been that. Had he never boxed again in all these sequels and fought all these other times, he would have ended on an incredible note. The public would have thought, hey, this nobody took the champ to the limit. What a great achievement that was. But then what does he do? So that's what I mean. When somebody tells you your career's over, when you can't accept it. But then the end of that great scene is the whole, I gotta be around it. As he's half crying.
Yeah.
I've said it to you before. What would I do when the time comes I can't play amateur softball? It's nothing compared to what these guys are doing. But I love doing it. There'll be a time I can't play with my friends anymore. They're a lot younger than I am. I'm not going to be able to keep up with them too many more years. What will I do? I'll be one of those I gotta be around it guys. I'll probably become an umpire or get into a seniors league or something like that. I can relate to that guy intensely. So I love that scene so much. And these reasons I've just given are all the reasons why.
We are talking about the wrong movie now.
Yeah, Rocky 2. It's hard not to talk about the sequel. Star Wars will be the same thing. We do that in a few weeks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's relevant with certain movies.
Okay, let's go back to the first movie then. And you mentioned On the Waterfront a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Great comparison. That's certainly relevant in Raging Bull, too. That movie more so than this one actually has comparisons to On the Waterfront. But like that one, Rocky was shot mostly on location. Short shoot. This was only 28 days long. Gritty, authentic, uneducated characters. They don't have a whole lot other than using their bodies, as Rocky says to Adrian. My father said, I don't have much of a brain, so I better use my body. Well, that's the same thing that Terry Malloy is going through and On the Waterfront.
And very authentic portrayals of poverty in both movies. Mm-hmm. You really don't see much of that in Hollywood. Even when they'll say a character's poor, they rarely show it in a way that's this believable and probably relatable to a lot of Americans. It could have honestly contributed to the popularity of this film that for the first time in a very long time, a lot of Americans saw themselves an accurate portrayal of what it's like to be poor in urban America in a Hollywood film.
And not anywhere near as serious or dangerous or problematic as what happens with Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver, who could be poor, but he has nothing to spend his money on, so all that he's making is going into his wallet. We see how much money he has. Also lives in the dive of an apartment. But like Bickle, he's lonely. Not, again, not nearly in the same level of loneliness. Rocky is, I wouldn't say fake, but when he's around Adrian especially, it's like he's putting on a front. He's trying to be happy and chipper. And I noticed, as an aficionado of all these movies, that was kind of always the case with him. When he's alone, especially in this one and in the second one, he lets down his guard. You can see how lonely and defeated this guy feels.
Only Cuff and Link know what it's really like for him.
Trivia question. Is Turtle. She got it before I even asked it.
What's the name of the fish?
Moby Dick.
Yeah.
I told you the Rocky boys would come back in this podcast. So we keep on mentioning On the Waterfront, which does mention boxing, doesn't have any in it. And this is the rare sports-themed flick on the Top 100 project, because The Hustler didn't make it, Field of Dreams didn't make it, both nominated and could have been on the cusp, at least I think so. I would probably put them on my list.
The Hustler was a really big surprise to me that it didn't make it.
I think at least made the sports top 10 of the genres category.
It did, yeah.
Okay, there you go. And except for the opening scene where he's fighting Spider Rico, a character who comes back 30 years later in Rocky Balboa. He's a fairly major supporting player in that movie, and it's the same actor playing him. He's fighting him early on. We really don't see him box again until the climactic boxing match. And I said to you before we even put the movie in that you may like this movie more than you might think because it isn't really about the sports at all.
I don't know what you thought. I didn't think I would like this movie. Because I hadn't seen it yet?
Because you're not a sports fan. You're not a sports movie fan.
Yeah, I guess so. But so many people have recommended Rocky to me over the years. And I like a good movie. There's lots of movies that aren't necessarily up my alley. But when they're good, when they're one of those great films, then it doesn't really matter. It kind of transcends. Like, I don't love horror movies as a genre, but I love a great horror movie.
And we just came from seeing one.
We just saw It Follows. That's why I thought of that, which terrified me to my core. Like, I've been traumatized by that movie. But I recommend it.
We record this podcast in the mid-evening, and Bev will be going to bed in a few hours by herself. I always stay up late. She'll tell me tomorrow if she slept okay. Hey, maybe I'll have problems sleeping. I don't know. Anyway, back to Rocky again. We talked about details in his apartment and the crap that he lives in. Did you notice the KFC bucket as the base of a lamp?
No, I didn't see
that. It's never lingered on, so it's a nice touch. Drinking the raw eggs you talked about in the sponsor promo at the beginning of this podcast. That's a hell of a detail. And the pink sweaters that his ringmen are wearing in the match. Mickey and the Cutman, Al Savani.
So why are they wearing pink sweaters?
I don't know, but they are. And Rocky has that huge baggy robe. That's a great detail that was actually an accident. There were a few accidents that they made work for them. Mm-hmm. One is the robe. It's so big, and people would notice that, so they thought, we'll just have Rocky comment on that.
They just threw in the line. And another one is the big poster, the shorts are the wrong color. It's red with white stripes instead of white with red stripe. So they inserted a line where he points out that it's wrong, and they go, ah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the promoter literally says, does it even matter?
Speaking of mistakes in that scene, he wakes up, it's still dark, there's literally nobody in that arena except the promoter who shows up fully dressed in his suit with the carnation and the lapel and everything, just walking around at presumably 6 in the morning.
And even though Rocky's one of the participants in this fight, why is he getting into the Philadelphia Spectrum at 6 in the morning or 3 in the morning or whatever time it is?
Good point. They give him a key.
Just come and go as you please, Rock.
Oh, you're a fighter. Come on in. But that is neat that there was a mistake made and they just went ahead and kept it in the film.
The other big improv is the skating scene.
Yeah, they wanted to have just a proper skating rink during the day when it was full of people and open to the public, but they couldn't afford the extras. But what a great solution to that problem. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a genius solution, and it works. Although it's funny that he goes to the trouble of getting the skating rink, but he doesn't even put on a pair of skates and skate with her. They don't even seem to really want to skate.
They're both skating better than he probably could. Yeah.
But it's this really sweet romantic gesture, and they have the place themselves, and they really work it by getting that guy to yell at them and pressure them.
Counting down them. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes! And that's almost like a boxing match might be, too, where you've got a certain amount of time. Oh, it's a countdown. But back to the night where he goes to the building and meets up with the promoter. He goes back and talks to Adrian. That was the scene Stallone thought was the most important in the whole film, where Rocky confessed to her, I can't beat this guy. Mm-hmm. I don't have a chance against him. I just want to go the distance. Because no one ever has done that against the world heavyweight champion. There's a trivia question. How many fights had Apollo Creed lost going into this match?
None, right?
He was undefeated.
Yeah.
So, again, I will give away a future movie or future movies. Apollo never loses one time because he loses to Rocky in part two and then retires.
That's not an official match.
That's an exhibition. For those who know Rocky IV, his trainer, this is supposed to be an exhibition! There's a guy who's in all the movies. Stallone's in all of them. Burt Young's in all of them. Mm. And he gets worse as it goes along. He really does. We saw him in Chinatown. Actually, Burt Young's first AFI appearance. Small role.
He's the cuckolded husband.
Mm, pretty important one. He's the first character we see on screen, I think, even before Nicholson in Chinatown. And then he was in all the sequels, and he got worse and more irritating as he went along. He does have some sweet moments in Rocky Balboa. As I said, only hours ago I saw it again. But he also has scenes where you just want to say, Stallone, do a rewrite on that. But then the screenplay in 6, I'll call it 6, does have some problems for sure. Even though there's some great touches and some great details he puts in there. And as I said, it's kind of a remake of this film. You get a brash, arrogant black fighter that he goes up against who he's not supposed to have any chance against. The difference this time is because he's so old. He's taken on this world-class, undefeated heavyweight champion. And he loses by decision in that one, too. But then he can actually finally retire. But Tony Burton is the other guy who's in all the movies. First he's with Apollo in 1 and 2. Then he's with Rocky and Apollo in 3, and so on. We saw him briefly in The Shining. He hooks up Dick with a snowmobile to get up to the Overlook Hotel. One of the only other black characters in the film, along with, of course, Scatman and Crothers. Mm-hmm. And even though Mickey and Apollo are not in all the movies, nor is Adrian in all the movies, their spirit when they are dead, and now the spoiler, but they all die before the series is fully over, is in each one of them.
Do you remember what I said about what happened to the character of Adrian? Why Talia Shire's character dies of cancer, did you say?
The woman cancer.
The woman's cancer. I said she died of dignity between the third and fourth movies.
Yeah, she's
she
kind
just
of bad.
Finally was like, I can't do this anymore.
Not third and fourth movie. It's after the fifth.
Oh,
one.
God. Wow. It really took her a while to croak of that disease. You're a Coppola. Get out of there. You're better than this.
Right. She was in the two Godfather films, of course. Yeah. And she's pretty good in Rocky too. I never loved her as Adrian, actually, even though everyone does. And she was nominated for Best Actress for this performance. She lost to Faye Dunaway, which we covered last week, mm-hmm. Network. She does a good job with Adrian, but I don't really sympathize with her as much as I think you're supposed to.
It's overkill in the beginning with the glasses and the mumbling. And I never got the impression that she liked him until they kiss.
The one scene that you had a problem with is...
Okay, so I hesitate to say I have a problem with it. It is the 70s, and I don't think anybody making this film would have understood why maybe it's a bad message to send to have Rocky kind of bully her into staying, trap her into a corner, and kiss her when she says she doesn't want to be kissed.
Well, he is the proponent of yes means yes, because he does say to her, I'm going to kiss you. You don't have to kiss me back if you don't want it, but I'm going to kiss you.
That, in some circles, would be called sexual assault. And, of course, she ultimately wants it. But
he is asking her.
This is the problem, is that no means yes to him. There's that whole notion everybody's familiar with, no means no. The reason that had to be driven to people's heads so much is because in popular culture, scenes like this in Rocky give people the impression that even if a woman is actively giving you aggressive red light
she's
over
not.
And over and over. She is. She won't
she
take her
not.
Coat off. She's resisting. She's saying she wants to go home. She's saying, my brother's worried about me. I want to go. I want to go. Please let me go. That's no. So anyway, okay, I don't think Rocky's a rapist. I'm not suggesting that at all. And I think were the movie made today, that scene would have played out drastically differently in a way that probably would have just been far safer. I haven't been in that circumstance exactly, but I've had men try to intimidate me before, and I'm telling you, when you're in that situation where you suddenly realize that maybe you can't leave, it's not romantic, it's not sexy, it's terrifying.
Do you think that this guy is being that way? He takes his top off and reveals his big muscles in his tank top, and she's still dressed in all of her sweaters and
her
coat.
It's intimidating.
But do you think the way that Rocky's playing it is? And don't forget, earlier in the film, we see him do his loan shark job. He can't even do that properly.
So here's my main problem
meaning
with
he
this
refuses
scene.
To break this guy's thumbs. He's a
I
big know, softie.
I saw it too. So this is my problem. More than some misguided portrayal of seduction, it's really inconsistent in his character because to me he comes across as a bully. Now, lots of people don't see it that way. They see it as very romantic because he's trying to get Adrian to come out of her shell
right.
by physically cornering her and kissing her when she doesn't want it. But anyway, the way he is doesn't seem sweet. It doesn't seem gentle. In every other scene, we see him being sweet and gentle. He sees a girl acting up on the street, and he just walks her home and talks to her, and he's sweet to her, and he never... You know what I'm saying?
That character is in Rocky Balboa.
Oh, okay.
Different actress, but it's Little Marie.
That scene seems to have no point at all, except to just get added to the roster of sweet things
how
Rocky
he's a nice guy.
Yeah. They can't go out of their way more to prove what a nice guy he is, and then there's... This not so nice.
Maybe because movies were made really by men back in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
The director, the screenwriter, the producers, the studio.
It.
That these guys honestly thought that that was the way to do this kind of scene and didn't know better.
Yeah, and I say, if he was making this movie today, he would totally make that scene differently. And I don't think their intention was like that at all. But it felt inconsistent in his character.
Okay.
Even though he seemed like he was being disrespectful, he wasn't listening to her. Come sit on the couch. The couch is covered in garbage. At the very least, it's disrespectful. Why would you invite her into your home if you can't remove the empty upturned beer bottles that are stuffed behind your couch cushion? It's not just like your apartment just needs a woman's touch. It is a sty. What is the matter with you?
Okay, maybe you can't get past that one scene.
I can get past
that.
Right,
well,
I obviously
then,
can get
because
past
my
that
question
one
for was, do you buy the love story? This movie did not make the passes
list. That,
I think this is a great love story. Also, knowing where it goes, you don't know where it goes because you haven't seen the sequel.
Okay, so after that scene, from that point on, they're a couple. Their relationship is what makes the film for me. A colleague of mine at work, it came up that I had seen the movie the night before, and she was so delighted, and she looks at me and she says, this is my favorite movie of all time. And I asked her why, and she said, it's not really a sports movie, it's really about a romance, it's really about their relationship. So she says that what really gets to her is how their relationship doesn't feel like a big, dumb Hollywood romance with unrealistic grand gestures and things getting in their way. She says that the romance in the movie is what real life romance is like, because they're just sweet to each other, they look after each other, they're loyal to each other. The really romantic scene is when Adrian has that fight with Polly and she's cowering in her bedroom and he comes in and she says, "Do you want a roommate?" And
absolutely.
And that's the right answer and he doesn't hesitate. And then from that moment on, these people have each other and they win no matter what happens from now on. And that authentic romance is what makes it her all-time favorite movie. Speaking of authenticity, the ending, which is, of course, ridiculous in a fantasy that he could last 15 rounds against Apollo Creed. Come on. But...
Oh, before you say this, one quick point. The movie begins November 25th, 1975. The movie ends New Year's. So just over a month. And it's not even a full month he gets to train.
Yeah.
And he's a fighter. He's an okay fighter. But to take on the heavyweight champion. Whoa, there's fantasy. Continue.
So... So it's a fantasy, we can all address that, but I really believe that had he won that fight, I don't think I would like the movie this much.
No one would.
Because the point of him losing the fight is that he's won because he has Adrian, he's won because he has dignity, he's won because, you know, it's all about the American dream, but the American dream was just to get a shot, was just to have a chance, was to find happiness, not to be a champion.
Stallone does a solo commentary in this movie, and he says at the end when it's, "Adrian, Adrian!" She comes in the ring. He can't even see. His eyes are swollen shut. He's been beaten by this guy for 15 rounds. One of my favorite ridiculous moments in the history of movies, period, is, "Where's your hurt?"
Those little
it's
moments.
It's so ridiculous. He can't even see her at all. But then Stallone loves it so much that his career, his romantic life, his friendship life, because Polly even helps her out by, "Polly?" He actually finally stands up for his sister and opens up the rope so she can get through, because she shouldn't get in the ring. The cops should be keeping her out. But all of it comes to a head for him, and then they end in a freeze frame. As Stallone has said, he's tried to find that moment in other movies and hasn't been able to ever do that again. Not many people have.
There's something about those two as a couple that it's impossible not to root for them with your whole heart, and that ending is moving, genuinely.
And the last line they say is exchanging love for each other, "I love you, I love you," rather than a lot of screenplays that might have said, "I did it, I lasted 15 rounds." We know, I'm so glad that he actually put that into words. Because he had just said to her the night before, "All I want to do is go the distance." And now he's got his woman, too. They had never said, "I love you," in the movie until that moment.
Yeah, and in a way, it's almost a relief that Apollo wins the fight, because Apollo's not even a villain. And you're kind of relieved that he gets to keep his dignity, too. And you're like, everybody wins!
Yeah, he's not being portrayed as a typical angry black man, or as a guy who has no character whatsoever in the background.
Yeah, villainous, cocky fighter. Even though he is cocky... He was loosely based on or inspired by Muhammad Ali.
Yes, and the fight that they have was based on a fight that Ali had with a guy named Chuck Wepner, who was much like Rocky's supposed to be in this film, some soup can. He wasn't supposed to go even a couple of rounds and managed to knock Ali down, and then he was knocked out later in the fight. He lasted way longer than anyone thought he would. Also, Rocky's based in part on Joe Frazier, who lived in Philadelphia, and he's the only guy that shows up for their big fight. They wanted all kinds of former champions, and Smoking Joe Frazier's the only one who actually was there, because I guess he still lived in Philadelphia. And his name, Rocky Marciano. In fact, when Mickey comes over and says, "Ah, Rocky Marciano." But as far as Apollo, we're asked to root for the white underdog over the better black boxer. That may be kind of typical in movies, but as we said, he had some depth. Weathers got the role partly because he was brash and even disrespectful of Sly. Stallone had the role. The studio finally said to the director, John G. Avildsen, we haven't said his name yet, guy who directed Karate Kid, which is kind of Rocky with kicking. Many years later, also a massive hit. And then Avildsen did Rocky V, which everyone despises, including Stallone himself. But the powers that be said you can use Stallone, so then he's in the role. Weathers didn't know this was going to be the guy he'd be working with. So at one point he said, "I could do better if you get a better actor in here with me." And Stallone's response, maybe it wasn't that way then, but when he talks about the making ofs of the DVD and the commentary and everything, "Hire him! This guy's perfect for this role," because he wanted somebody brash like Muhammad Ali was. And Apollo gets even more depth in part two. We see even more scenes of him. You see how human he really is. He wants to fight Rocky because he wants to beat him for real. Not in a technical knockout. He wants to actually knock him out. Rocky refuses to go down, of course. I ain't going down no more.
I haven't physically hurt you enough yet.
That's one thing about the Rocky series. It's always this great white hope thing. This guy who really shouldn't have a chance, but people want to get behind that. I don't think the movie's ever tried to be racial or racist in any deliberate way. The protagonist in part three is also a black guy, Mr. T. And he doesn't have much depth. He's just an angry black man. He's what Apollo is not in these movies. But Carl Weathers is in the first four films, and he's well played and he's well drawn for the most part.
You called Mr. T the protagonist. He's the antagonist.
I don't want to get beat up, so I thought I'd better call him pro. Apollo does become Rocky's trainer in part three, but the trainer in the first two films and the part of the third film is Burgess Meredith, Mickey Goldmill. What did you think of the scene when Mickey's trying to convince Rocky to be his manager? Did you like that scene? Did you agree with me, though, too, that he is being opportunistic? You understand why. He seems like he wants to take care of him. He even says, I want to take care of you.
Yeah, I don't even see how he's anything but opportunistic. I think he's taking advantage of the situation and the fact that Rocky's not all that bright and probably doesn't have a lot of people clamoring all over themselves to train him for this suicide fight. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really seem like a particularly authentic gesture of friendship in any way. I love that scene in the way that it plays out and Rocky having that temper tantrum after he leaves and just raging out. It's funny, you know, Rocky's dumb, but he seems to have this handle on his emotional intelligence that he understands that he just needs to rage out and yell at himself and get this spoiling anger out of him, and then he can do the smart thing, which is get Mickey to train him. Mm. And I always had this impression in Rocky that their relationship was a big part of it, but it's really not.
It's more so in two.
Okay.
But it is a father figure, and you get the feeling that Rocky has had to fend for himself for a long time. They never really explain where he came from or anything like that. But then he does say, his father said, you don't have much of a brain, you better use your body. So maybe he was an abusive jerk.
Yeah, that's not really abusive. Maybe it's not nice.
Well,
advice.
My point is that Rocky seems like he's been alone for a little while, maybe a long time. So Mickey comes over to say, I'm going to help you. And his whole tantrum is, but where were you when I needed you a long time ago? Mm. I think in a way that's a father figure kind of thing. Just like Pauly becomes his pseudo-brother in the whole series, even though he's only related to him through Adrian when they get married in part two.
Pauly, does he ever get any kind of comeuppance for being such a...
No. He gets to be a worse character. Not necessarily a worse person. That gets a little better for the most part. He has moments in Rocky IV and Rocky Balboa before they go to the ring where he has these heartfelt moments with Rock. And the fourth one, it's, if I could unzip myself and be somebody else, I want to be you. And that's kind of sweet. And in Rocky Balboa, it's all about, you know, get this out of your system and then move on with your life. It's good advice. He cares about him. But he's also an ass through a lot of this series, and even to Rocky, the one person who's loyal to him. Well, so is Adrian. You get the feeling that he's been a jerk to Adrian their whole lives. He drinks a lot in this movie. He drinks a lot in the other ones, too, really. Especially in 3, the beginning, he has this big thing where Rocky has to bail him out of jail. He throws a liquor bottle at a Rocky pinball machine game because he's become jealous of Rocky's success. We said earlier that Rocky's a loan shark. That's something that's kind of forgotten when you think about the whole series. But that's what he's really earning his money from, more so than boxing. He gets something like $40 for beating Spider Rico in that opening fight. Joe Spinell, Taxi Driver, the 2 Godfather films. Now this one, more AFI films than a lot of people. And 3 of them won Best Picture as well, the 2 Godfather films and Rocky. Never a big part of any of them, except maybe this one. Pretty major supporting player. Also a very nice guy. When it comes right down, it gives Rocky money for several things, including for his date with Adrian.
He gets $40 for winning that fight, but he gets $50 just from his boss being a nice guy. So this is a super American movie. It came out around the time of the Bicentennial, which is also a big part of the film, and America was coming out of the recession and Nixon and Vietnam and the fallout from the 60s, and everybody was kind of recovering from Watergate, and they elected an underdog peanut farmer to be president. And
right around the same time as this movie coming out,
actually. Yeah, like the 60s were over and everybody wanted to return to this good old American dream. And all the films that we've been seeing from the 70s and certainly were popular in the 70s as these really nihilistic and pessimistic films like Network, like Cuckoo's Nest, like Taxi Driver, and this is the antithesis of that.
Star Wars is.
Yes, this is an optimistic, and it was probably why it was such a massive hit. And like I said, it was one of the rare films to accurately portray poverty. We have a podcast we listen to, Cracked, and they said one of the most popular articles they ever wrote on their website got millions of hits was just an article talking about what it's really like to grow up very poor. And it's one of those things that you just don't see covered accurately, so that when something does show poverty the way it really is, all the people who've experienced it latch onto it and love it, and it feels like they're finally being represented. So I suspect that's a big reason for its popularity and its optimism.
Well, I mentioned Star Wars and Close Encounters we're going to cover very soon on the list. That also had optimistic endings and beginnings and middles and were gigantic hits, as was Superman that didn't make the list. E.T. is a few years after, another one that's pretty optimistic, and that was one of the biggest hits that was ever made. And that's one of the reasons why Spielberg was so successful, I guess. He kept on capturing the zeitgeist of America and the fact that people didn't want to feel down anymore, I guess.
Yeah, the pendulum swung back the other way aggressively, starting around this time with Rocky.
And how funny that in the 2000s, after 9/11, some of the bigger hits were the darker ones, like the Batman series.
Yeah, good point.
You can never predict what America's going to love. However, most of the big hits are the Avengers and the Transformers films. that aren't really, well, yeah, that too. They aren't really nihilistic. They may have their dark moments, but they're not all about death and destruction.
No.
Well, if that's all about authenticity, one thing that the Rocky series never gets right, and maybe because they wanted to avoid the R rating, but none of the movies ever swear, not the four-letter words anyway. There's a few objectionable words in this one.
They're going to call you a whore.
Yeah, that maybe is about as offensive as it gets. Mickey says the S word, so there's mild cussing at best. But there's not really any corrupt promoters in this thing until Rocky V, where a guy is pretty much Don King. But even he's not nearly as corrupt as Don King actually was. And there's no drugs in this thing either, which certainly would have been a factor. And Stallone would have been taking steroids through a lot of this, obviously, yeah. If you've ever even seen pictures of him in Rocky III and IV. And he would have probably done it for Rocky Balboa because he was getting pretty old. I think he was about 60 by the time they shot that movie. And for him to be as in shape as he was, that wasn't all natural.
He was busted for steroids.
Around that time, yeah. That's right. Probably training for Balboa before we knew it was going to be made. Because it kind of got made out of nowhere. It was something he wanted to do for a long time, and then suddenly he just got greenlit. And let's make the movie now. But we'll cut it that slack because it hits so many other things out of the park when it comes to authenticity. Another touch I like an awful lot, and it's authentic to him, but not really to AFI characters or even iconic movie characters. Rocky has more self-doubt and humility than we almost ever see in any character, but certainly the big icons. John Wayne as an actor, not in one particular role, never seemed to have self-doubt. You get it a little bit in High Noon with Gary Cooper, not really an iconic character.
Yeah. He's not doubting himself, he's doubting all his friends that are letting him down. He's actually a pretty confident and competent guy.
Mm. But Rocky confesses these things in that big scene that he thinks is so important to Adrian.
That's a really good point.
I'm not good enough to do this, but I'm going to try anyway. Maybe that's another thing people latch on to, is that I maybe not be good enough to do the thing I want to do either, but I'm at least going to try.
I think most people are that person more than they are John Wayne. Most people do have lots of doubts, whether they express them to people or not.
Mm-hmm. And it may be unusual for professional boxers to do this, but, and you only ever see this in the first movie, I think. I don't remember him ever drinking beer or smoking after the first movie, but he does that after his fight with Spider, and he wears glasses, these weird-looking kind of granny glasses, that don't come back into Rocky Balboa. But then, like I say, he becomes smarter in the interim as well, and then gets dumber again. So things do change.
Hey, did you notice how Love fixed Adrienne's vision as well? She never needs to wear those glasses again after their first date. After he takes them off, and she's like, won't be needing these anymore.
I talked about recurring themes and said that 6 is kind of a remake of 1. I mentioned most of the reasons why that is. But other themes in the series as a whole is that Rocky is kind of like Homer Simpson. That's his style of boxing. Just keep on taking punishment. You could debatably call it the Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope. But that wasn't really what Rocky was doing. It was more about just take the shots, last in there long enough to beat him. And another trend that you see that changes is that in the first film, when he gets knocked down in the 14th round against Apollo, you see Mickey in the background saying, down, down, stay down. But then in the sequels, it's almost always from Mickey or anyone else, get up, get up. Keep on taking more shots to your skull. You're probably at tens of thousands of shots to your head at this point. Another line that's probably pretty famous from this film, Apollo says at the very end of round 15, ain't give me no rematch, ain't give me no rematch. Don't want one. Even though there have been 5 sequels with another one coming, a spinoff with Creed. But then Stallone loves his do-overs. Rocky does beat Apollo in the second movie. I love Rocky too, but it's absurd that he even lasts 2 minutes against this guy. What he can't see, as Mickey points out, yeah, you see nothing. Creed would have caved the whole side of your face in.
You don't need to see when you have heart. It's America!
And you also fight right-handed, but still, it's just absurd that he would last another 15 rounds and then actually beat the heavyweight champion and retire him at this point. But Stallone did the same kind of stuff in the Rambo series because that became all about, we have to win this time, right? At least in, I think, Rambo 2, he has that line with his superior officer. That was all about winning the Vietnam War this time, on film at least. But as I said, Stallone and the Rocky and Rambo guys, and Reagan, did end the Cold War. Okay, the director, John G. Avildsen. Only AFI film is Rocky. He also did The Karate Kid, another massive hit. And like Martin Scorsese, who did Raging Bull, he wasn't a boxing fan before making a boxing movie. Maybe that's why there's not as much boxing in the film as there might otherwise be.
Fighting's not all that convincing either.
Do you know much about boxing? I really don't know.
Well, I know what it looks like when somebody actually hits somebody else in the face.
Well, they gotta sell they're being hit, but they can actually be hit.
Yeah, I know, but they weren't doing that great of a job of it, is what I'm trying to say.
I was reading that Avildsen had Stallone write out the actual boxing matches, right down to the actual moves they make. Not that Rocky has 4 punches in this round and Apollo has 20, or reverse of that. He wanted Rocky to actually choreograph every single little move. So if you didn't think it worked, it wasn't for lack of effort.
It's not a massive failure, but it is not the most convincing fighting I've ever seen on screen.
One of the reasons this movie won the editing Oscar is because probably the training montage was a big part of that, but also because they shot the fight backwards for the sake of the makeup. They started on the 15th, they went back to the first round, so they wouldn't have to worry about how to keep that consistent. And I just mentioned the training montage. You've seen that montage before, I'm sure, right? Or at least one of them in one of the other films.
Oh my God, yeah.
Did it work on you?
It's really hard to say.
Because it does on me, but I'm also a sucker for these movies.
It's impossible to react to it like you're seeing it for the first time.
Abelson told the composer Bill Conti he actually wanted the music to sound like Rocky's flying now, and that's why the lyrics actually say, gonna fly now.
I was paying too close attention to the Steadicam stuff. This is one of the first movies to really extensively use
Steadicam.
Do you remember
what the first two are?
Bound for Glory.
Right, that was the same year, 1976.
And the other one's Marathon Man.
Also in 76.
Yes!
And then we talked about Garrett Brown plenty on The Shining, because that's where Steadicam really got its fame from.
Yeah, Garrett Brown, the inventor of the Steadicam.
But yes, he was able to run up the steps with Rocky. Mm-hmm. Another example of editing, not that this is some great editing technique, when he goes up the stairs the first time and can barely get up there and he's all cramped up, and then when he has his triumphant run up the stairs, it was only a matter of hours apart. They just waited for it to get more light out, look like it's a different day. Then he just makes the run properly.
Totally makes sense.
Well, the writer was Stallone, who's written a vast majority of his screenplays, all the Rocky movies, he's rewritten a bunch of other ones he's been in. Generally, he has a hand in them. Sometimes you can really tell, unfortunately. But when he does it right, he really does it right. Because as I said, Rocky Balboa has a damn good script, too. And this one, I think the Writers Guild, would it be them, who have in their top 100 screenplays of all time? I forget where it ranked, but
yeah,
they love it.
I saw that. It's in the 70s or something, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
The producers that are shared with Raging Bull are Irwin Winkler and Robert Chartoff. Winkler actually produced Goodfellas, too, so he's got three very famous AFI films, much beloved. And Chartoff and Winkler both produced The Right Stuff, which did not make the list, but I believe was nominated both times. The movie is 185:1, and we watched the Blu-ray. There are approximately 12 trillion DVDs and Blu-rays of this series now, I think. Looks okay, not brilliantly wonderful, but it looks pretty solid. The cinematographer shooting it, James Crabe, or Crabbe, I think it's just pronounced Crabe, C-R-A-B-E. He did The China Syndrome and The Karate Kid for Avildsen. Did you like the moment with the lens flares right at the beginning of the training montage? Dun, 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 dun. I said to you that J.J. Abrams must have just been going crazy in that moment.
Over that.
It's a long lens flare, too. The two Oscar-winning editors, Scott Conrad and Richard Halsey. Conrad went on to Cheech and Chong movies. And Halsey cut Edward Scissorhands for Tim Burton. The composer, Bill Conti, who did write that ultra-famous score, worked on all but one of the sequels. It was Rocky IV. That was one that he wasn't in because they didn't have his music for Drago! It was Hearts on Fire. He did compose for The Right Stuff and The Karate Kid, and he's also the guy that Julia Roberts was calling Stickman when she won the Oscar and wanted to go on in her big speech when she won for Aaron Brockovich.
Because he was the one starting the music?
He was the composer in the front row. They don't even do that anymore.
The stick is the baton?
Yeah. The way they do it now, the whole orchestra's not even there. This year's Oscars, they show that they're not there. I didn't really notice that they weren't. Probably for many years now, they haven't been. But we keep on talking about authenticity. An authentic touch in this film is there isn't really that much music. The opening has the Gonna Fly Now music. The training and fighting montages have music. Rocky IV becomes a music video, almost, with all the various songs that Stallone uses in that film. And incidentally, Stallone directed 2, 3, 4, and Balboa, so he directed 4 of the 6 films. I always ask you about the music score, because you're not a fan of them in general. We've had some of the greatest ones of all time in the last month or so, with Jaws and Taxi Driver. But what about this one?
I like score, but it has to be used minimally. It's just when there's overkill or blanketed music, too much trying to push you over the edge to feel what they want you to feel at the time. It's a bit of a crutch. But this music's so iconic, and they don't overuse it. They use it in appropriate times, so I'm going to go ahead and say I like it.
All right, good. Okay, Rocky's influence. There's a ton, but I'm going to boil it down to just a few things. We've already talked about On the Waterfront plenty, and we'll talk about it again on Raging Bull. And that was not a movie that you liked very much, On the Waterfront. I'm getting the feeling you like Rocky more so far between those two.
Yeah, I think I would sooner watch Rocky again than On the Waterfront.
One thing they also share is the movie's literally cold. You can see breath coming out of their mouths in both On the Waterfront and Rocky. And there's lots of dock workers. Blue-collar trade, if there ever was one. Influence-wise, of course, the sequels. Also, movies like Rounders and Rudy and all about that million-to-one shot that comes through. Probably hundreds of imitators.
But that was a genre before Rocky came along.
Yeah, but they're trying to capitalize on the success of this film. Mm. And I love Rounders, but it is Rocky with playing cards. Let's move on to awards and AFI lists. This movie has more than almost any other we will ever cover. 3 Oscars, Best Picture, Best Director, and the editing. And as I said last week with Network, that was not something that Sidney Lumet was very happy about. I don't know if he thought he should win Best Director, but he was pretty cheesed that didn't win Best Picture over this.
Yeah.
You're going to agree?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the 4 movies we covered at the end of the podcast, actually, so save those thoughts for then. 7 failed nominations. Best Actor for Stallone, the only time he ever got a nomination of any kind, also for his screenplay. So he had 2 in that one year, never again. He, like Nicolas Cage and Kevin Costner, has a ton of Razzie nominations. But I think actually all 3 of those guys have only 2 nominations ever in their lives. And for Stallone, it's an only one movie. Talia Shire for Best Actress, Burt Young and Burgess Meredith for Supporting Actor.
Really? Yeah. Burgess Meredith?
Yeah, why not? Jason Robards beat him both. The screenplay, the sound, and Gonna Fly Now, the song. The film made the National Film Registry in 2006, the year that Rocky Balboa came out. And here are the AFI lists. Yo Adrian was 80th in the top 100 quotes. He says it a lot. It probably should have been Yo Adrian, I did it from the second movie rather than just Yo Adrian, because that's the way the second movie ends, but okay. Gonna Fly Now was 58th on the top 100 songs. The film was 52nd on the top 100 thrills, which you don't agree with. Rocky Balboa was the 7th most inspirational hero on the heroes and villains list. The film was 4th on the top 100 cheers, most inspiring. And it was 2nd in the sports category of the top 100 genres. Guess what was number 1? We already talked about it a lot. It was Raging Bull, right. And then it was nominated for the passions and the music scores, but didn't make those lists. So that's the end of Rocky. Let's talk about 1976. Taxi Driver, All the President's Men, Network, and Rocky. We've covered them all. I like all four films, but my favorite is the first one. And I'm going to watch that one a lot more before I die. I've seen Rocky so many times, I don't really need to see it ever again. It's probably the least of the four, even though I probably enjoy it as much as the other movies. But what about yourself?
I think Taxi Driver is the best movie, but Network is my personal favorite of those four.
Yeah, it's a funny way to look at it, isn't it? All the President's Men is about a more important topic than any of these. Although it doesn't make the movie the best. It doesn't make the movie better than the other movies. But
four really good movies. I can't say there's one that I didn't enjoy.
We've had a couple of great years lately. 75 had three excellent films. Cuckoo's Nest, Jaws, Nashville. This one's got four great ones. 74 had only two, but Chinatown and Godfather Part 2. The 70s, we knew it was going to be a great run. Very few duds. And 76 was a strong year. Well, now that Bev has seen Rocky, there are only two AFI films left that you've not seen. And they're both Holocaust films.
Yep.
Sophie's Choice and Schindler's List.
They're downers.
You don't like the Possessory movies, Sophie's and Schindler's.
No, I just don't like thinking about the Holocaust all that much, I think.
They're gut-wrenching parts.
Yeah,
to watch,
that's why
no
I'm
doubt.
Avoiding them.
Okay, so Rocky makes a list in the 70s the first time, then shoots up about 20 spots the second. What are your thoughts on that?
Like I said in the beginning, this is not my jam, this kind of movie. If I was making a personal list, I probably wouldn't put it on, but definitely can't deny the appeal, and it worked on me.
So you'd rather be 78th?
Yeah.
I was surprised it went up so high, too, actually. Okay, that's it. Next week, the Top 100 Project takes a knee so we can cover a flick that didn't make AFI's list. For the 10th time, we bring you the Not 100 Project. Trevor Little won our Pick Your Podcast contest. Congratulations, Trevor. Yay!
Whee!
And he chose Kevin Smith's indie breakout, Clerks.
We'll also spend a bit of time talking about his original choice, Super Troopers.
Yeah, just a little at the end. Not a movie that's all that influential, although they are making a sequel, so there is that at least.
Part of how we got the idea to do this contest was because Trevor was one of our listeners who volunteered a suggestion for a Not 100 Project, which was Super Troopers, and we mentioned that when we announced the contest, so it's a happy coincidence that he won, but when push came to shove, I guess he would rather pick a less silly or more influential movie.
Yeah, he had a lot of interesting choices. Stranger Than Fiction, Big Lebowski, which we would love to cover, but he did pick Clerks. So we'll stick with that, and it's a good one to review. The coming attractions trivia. Jay and Silent Bob have been in how many of Kevin Smith's 11 movies as a director?
So for the answer to that, please tune into next week's Not 100 Project podcast. If you'd like more trivia, along with lots of other fun stuff from Ryan and me, including links to some of the things that we talked about in today's podcast, please visit our website, top100project.com.
Visit it.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Top 100
Subscribe
Project
to it.
On iTunes. And you can also find us on Podomatic, top100project.podomatic.com.
That's good, too.
If you would like to reach us personally, our email address is top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And what's more, we would like to warmly thank our sponsor, Sparkplug Coffee.
I'd just like to say, the next to my kid being born, I don't have a kid, this is the greatest night in the history of my life. Yo, Bev, we did it!
And cut.